We're recording. 94.5 WELY, it's our weekly wilderness update brought to you by the BWCAW Coalition, funded by Lake County and St. Louis County. And we're joined today by Chris Filstrup, PhD applied limnologist with the Natural Resources Research Institute at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you here. And if you could, right off the bat, tell us what an applied limnologist does and what in particular you do with the Natural Resources Research Institute.
So limnology is simply the study of inland waters. So think about it as an ecologist that studies lakes and streams. For the most part, that's what I do. And I really have an applied aspect to my work. So I work on issues that affect the natural resources of the state and thinking about ways that we can better manage those natural resources. So my lab in particular focuses on understanding how lakes and streams respond to climate change and land use change from regional to continental scales. And the goal behind this work, like I said previously, is to help inform management decisions for these bodies of water. And I really have a strong focus on cyanobacteria harmful algal blooms, which is a topic I love to talk about.
So I'm very curious about that. Tell us what that is, how those algal blooms develop, and what that means for our natural resources.
So cyanobacteria are a type of bacteria that live in the water that undergo photosynthesis. So they're very similar to other members of algae, such as diatoms and green algae. They're also known as blue-green algae, which is something that the listeners may know them by.
Sure.
Because they have this blue-green pigment called phycocyanin, which gives them this really turquoisey color. So the thing to state is that cyanobacteria are a natural part of the ecosystem, a natural part of the phytoplankton community and lakes, but we tend to notice them when they become a problem. So cyanobacteria can form these really dense blooms on the surface of lakes that basically looks like someone spilled green paint or blue-green paint on the surface.
Right.
It's these really thick scums that are really unsightly that people notice. And part of the problem with that is all of that cyanobacteria can lead to low dissolved oxygen levels in the bottom water of lakes, which can cause fish kills. And all my angler friends here in Minnesota, they know there's a problem with the lake when you start seeing fish die.
Sure.
So that's one implication. The other one is that some types of cyanobacteria can also produce these really potent toxins. We don't know why they do that yet. That's part of what I'm trying to find out in some of the studies that I'm doing now. But they produce these toxins that are harmful to people and pets. So lots of times when pets are swimming in these pea soup lakes or lakes that look like pea soup, they're really green ones, they can ingest the water and get really sick and actually die after visiting some of these lakes.
Sure.
And those are the most heartbreaking stories that we actually hear. You know, little kids going to their grandma's lake up north and their dog ends up dying because it gets exposed to these toxins.
Right. We've certainly heard quite a bit of that in the news over the last couple of years with many lakes in particular in regards to people's dogs, just for their health and safety to not allow them to swim in certain lakes.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that I always caution people is we tend to think when the pets are out of the water, they're safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if your dog's been swimming in the water and all those algal cells start drying on their fur, they then come out and start grooming themselves and licking off those really concentrated algal cells. So if your dog is exposed to something like that, or even your kids, right? It's always best to have them come out of the water and then spray them off just to clean off any of those algal cells.
Right.
To remove that danger.
So some very important things to understand about human and animal exposure. Obviously, you know, in the land of 10,000 lakes, fishing is a huge pastime for so many people. and it has a direct effect on local economies, on recreation. What are some things? So, what are some of the factors that lead to these algal blooms?
Yeah. So the factors that we typically see are high levels of nutrients coming in from the landscape. So if you have really high levels of nitrogen or phosphorus due to certain land uses within the watershed, that helps fuel these blooms. The other thing that we see a lot of is changing climate are affecting algal blooms, where they're becoming more severe during the summer season, and they're actually persisting for longer periods as these lakes really start to warm up. Really the ideal time for blooms to develop is after a big rain event comes and flushes a lot of nutrients into a lake. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you have a really dry, calm period with really hot temperatures. So this is my Texas chili analogy. So, you know, you're cooking a pot of chili, right? And you start out, you kind of throw everything in the pot all at once, and then you let it simmer for a long time to really develop those flavors. And that's what happens in these lakes. So you dump all the nutrients in all at once, and the cyanobacteria tend to respond to them most rapidly. And then as you start heating up the temperatures, they really start to gain these competitive advantages over other types of algae. And that's where you really tend to see the densest bloom.
So it seems like on the larger scale, climate change and sort of the extremes of weather play a factor in that. But more specific to humans and our land use is understanding the watershed and how it's connected to what we do to our lawns and our gardens and our fields, fertilizers and things like that.
Yeah, that's definitely correct. So in kind of urban systems or for people that have lakeshore property, you know, one of the things we recommend is that you don't directly fertilize the lawn near the lake, because you don't want all that fertilizer running off into the system to help fuel these things. The other thing that could be done is leaving a little bit of vegetation buffer strip around the lake to kind of help prevent the movement of those nutrients from your lawn into the lake. But even for people in urban settings, you know, lawn fertilizer is a big one, but another big one that people don't tend to think about is pet waste.
Oh, right.
So if you have dogs and you don't clean up after them often, dog poop really has a lot of phosphorus in it, which is a weird thing to say, but it's true. So if you're not really cleaning up after your pet, all those nutrients run off with this big storm post that moves into a lake. Mm-hmm. So you get those really ripe conditions for algal blooms to actually occur.
Yeah, you know, just from a firsthand perspective, when I was younger, we lived on a pond that was kind of, it started as a swamp, was expanded into a larger pond, and a big development of houses was built around it. And every one of those houses had manicured lawns, and a lot of them had sloping lawns that led right down into the water. And we would see this in the hotter parts of the summer. You'd see these algae blooms, and you'd see the surface of the water and the whole pond just looked disgusting. You didn't want to go anywhere near it.
Yeah, I mean, blooms are really unsightly, and I always have to correct myself, because when I'm showing images of algal blooms, I always call them things like beautiful. And people look at me and they're like, what's wrong with you? And to me, they're just scientifically, they're very interesting. But you're exactly right. I mean, they're unsightly, and they actually reduce kind of economic revenue that
For
comes
sure.
into a region. Just because people don't want to go to those lakes. To share a little bit of my background, is I did a postdoc and worked for quite a while in the state of Iowa. And down there, we have a lot of lakes that really have these really dense, harmful algal blooms. And lots of people I would know, we would actually drive up to Minnesota to go fishing and spend a week on a lake in a cabin, right? Because you wanted to be where that water quality was much nicer and much cleaner. So, yeah, it definitely has a direct impact on regional economy.
Well, it's a really important thing to understand, especially when you experience what you have in seeing those algae blooms, and then seeing the contrast of, in a lot of the lakes, especially in the Boundary Waters region here, to see that really clean water, and you really have an appreciation for it and an important perspective. And now we have a little bit more information to work off to understand sort of our relationship with that water quality.
Most definitely, yeah. And I should note that, you know, recently algal blooms have been in the news. We've been seeing the cyanobacteria bloom on Lake Superior, which is a real big game changer.
Yeah.
So that's gotten a lot of press. But after the really recent warm temperatures that we've seen, we've been getting a lot of reports from people from around the state, you know, in the Duluth area, up near Ely, about possible cyanobacteria blooms. So right now is the time when kind of in the northern part of the state, you really see them start developing kind of in September, late August, early September. But those really warm temperatures we had for that particular span really started fueling things this year.
So as we identify algal blooms in lakes, what is there a process for mitigating that once it's in a lake?
Yeah, there are a couple things that can be done, but normally they're on, you know, a larger scale, such as a watershed scale.
Mm-hmm.
So those are like the stormwater management issues in some region are a big one. Thinking about nutrient immobilization on the landscape or just preventing it from getting into receiving waters. But like I said, there's things that shoreline homeowners can do and homeowners in general. Is just thinking about, you know, everything that you're applying to your lawn. Think about where that eventually ends up, right?
Right.
Either it's going into storm sewers and being discharged into receiving waters, or it's actually going directly into those receiving waters. So just be cautious with that. I know there's certain things like when you do need to fertilize, if you have a test that indicates you're deficient in a nutrient, lots of times that'll be nitrogen. So you can purchase phosphorus-free fertilizers.
Okay.
And fertilizer or phosphorus is what tends to limit algal production within these lakes. So if you're using phosphorus-free fertilizers, that actually doesn't have as big of an impact on the receiving waters that just using a fertilizer with nitrogen and phosphorus could have.
Got it. Well, some very important things to understand here and help us really appreciate our relationship to the watershed. Some fascinating work, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share your research with us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Chris Filstrup, PhD applied limnologist with the Natural Resources Research Institute at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Thank you so much for taking your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And our wilderness update is brought to you by BWCAW Coalition in partnership with federal, state, nonprofit, and business organizations to prevent the introduction of invasive species into the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. You're listening to the End of the Road Radio, WELY.